This is podcast number 109 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I want to tell you about the palace made by music. As music is this month's Mother's University topic, let me start by sharing a story found in a 1906 book, Why the Chimes Rang and Other Stories by Raymond MacDonald Alden. Many hundreds of years ago, there was a kingdom in a distant country, ruled by a good king who was known everywhere to be rich and powerful and great. But although the capital was a large and beautiful city, and the king was surrounded by nobles and princes almost as rich and powerful as he, there was one very strange thing noticed by everyone who came into the kingdom. The king had no palace. He lived in a plain house near the edge of the city, not half so large or fine-looking as many of those belonging to his subjects, and he had lived there for a good many years. Of course, there was a reason why the kingdom had no palace. It had not always been so. Years before, in the reign of the present king's father, there had stood in the midst of the capital city perhaps the most beautiful palace in the world. It was a very old building, so old that no one knew when it had been built, and it was so large that, although people often tried to count the number of rooms it contained, they always grew tired before they had finished. The walls were of white marble, with splendid columns on all four sides, and behind the columns, in spaces cut into the marble walls, were pictures in bright colors that people came from distant countries to see. No one knew who had built the palace, or painted the pictures on its walls, for it had been the treasure of the kings and the people of the kingdom for a longer time than their history told anything about. Then, when the present king was but a little child, the palace had been destroyed. On a festival day, when the royal family and the greater part of the citizens were marching in a procession outside the city, there had come a great earthquake. All over the kingdom, the people heard the rumbling and felt the ground shaking around them. But they had no idea what a terrible thing had happened until they came to the city. Then they found that the earth had opened and swallowed up the palace in one great crash. Not so much as a single block of the marble remained. The crumbled earth fell into the opening, covering the ruins out of sight and leaving a great rough piece of ground like that in a desert, instead of the beautiful spot that had always been there in the center of the city. Everyone felt thankful, first of all, that the king and all his family had been outside the building when the earthquake came, but in spite of this, they could not help mourning deeply over the loss of the palace. The king himself was so saddened by it that he grew old much sooner than he would otherwise have done, and he died not many years later. It seemed useless to try to build another palace that would satisfy those who had seen the splendor of the old one, and no one tried. When the young prince became king, although he could not remember how the palace looked in which he had been born, yet he had heard so much of its beauty that he mourned over its loss as deeply as his father, and would not allow any of his nobles or counselors to propose such a thing as the building of a new one. So he continued to live in the plain old house near the outskirts of the city, never going near the great empty space in the center of the capital. And this was how he came to be the only king in the world without a palace. But although everyone agreed that it was useless to try to build a new palace in the way in which other buildings were made, there were always some who hoped for a new one which should be no less splendid than the old. The reason for this was a strange legend that was written in the oldest books of the kingdom. This legend related that the beautiful old palace had been made in a single day, not having been built at all, but having been raised up by the sound of music. In those early days, it was said, there was music far more wonderful than any now known. Men had forgotten about it, little by little, as they grew more interested in other things. Indeed, everyone believed that there had been a time when, by the sound of music, men could tame wild beasts and make flowers bloom in desert places and move heavy stones and trees. But whether it was really true that the great palace had been made in this way was not so certain. There were some, however, who believed the legend with all their hearts, and they had hoped that a new palace might be made as beautiful as the one destroyed by the earthquake. For, they said, what has been done can be done again. If it is really true that a great musician made the old palace, it may be that someday we will find a musician who can make another. The musicians, of course, were especially interested in the old legend, and many a one of them made up his mind to try to equal the music of the earlier time. Often you might pass by the edge of a waste place where the old palace had stood and see some musician playing there. He had perhaps been working for years on a tune which he hoped would be beautiful enough to raise a new palace from the ruins of the old. In those days, men played on lyres or harps, or on flutes and pipes made of reeds that grew by the waterside. There were no organs, no orchestras, and no choirs. So the musicians came alone, one by one, and played their loveliest music, not minding that those who passed by often laughed at them for believing that anything would come of it. For they did not mind being laughed at when they had hope of such great glory as the maker of a palace would surely win. This went on year by year, until the young king grew to be almost as old as his father had been when he died. But no musician as great as those of the earlier time was found. Now there lived in the city a boy named Agathon, who wished to be a musician. He had played on the lyre ever since he was old enough to carry it, and there was no boy in the kingdom who could make sweeter music. Agathon had also a friend named Philo, who was as fond as he of playing on the lyre. They often used to talk together of the days when they should learn to play so well that they would dare to go, like the other musicians, and try to raise a new palace. "I'm sure it will be you who will finally do it," Philo would say to Agathon. "No," the other would answer. "I shall try, but by that time I am sure you will play a great deal better than I. And if it is one of us, we are such good friends that it will not matter which." One day the two boys made a discovery. It happened that Agathon was playing on his lyre when Philo, coming to see him, heard the tune and was so delighted with it that he cried, "I must try to play it too." So he ran for his own lyre and presently began to play before Agathon had finished. He did not strike the same notes that Agathon did, but other notes a little lower in the scale, and instead of making discord, the different notes sounded so sweetly together that both the boys looked up in surprise. "This is a new kind of music," said Agathon, "and I think it is better than when either you or I play alone." So they tried to play in this way a number of different tunes. When they had done this for a time, they had another thought. "If two different notes played together are more beautiful than one," said Philo, "why may not three be more beautiful than two?" "Sure enough," said Agathon, "and what is more, it may be that in this way people could make music as fine as that by which the palace was made." Having once formed this idea, the two boys were eager that it should be tried. So they went at once to one of the chief musicians of the city, with whom they were acquainted, and told him what they had discovered by playing their two instruments together. Then they suggested that he should take a friend with them, or perhaps even two friends, to the place where the palace had stood, and try what could be done by the new music. The musician was interested in what they said, but he shook his head. "It would be of no use," he said. "There is no musician who has not tried already, and it is foolish to think that two or three of us could play together better than we can play separately. Besides, each of us wants the glory of making the new palace for himself, and if we did it together, no one would be satisfied." "Would it not be enough," asked Agathon, "to have the pleasure of making it for the king, even if no one knew who had done it at all?" "No," said the musician. "If I do it, I want to do it myself and have the glory of it." And when the boy spoke to other musicians, they said very much the same thing. But Agathon and Philo were not discouraged. First of all, they looked for still another player. And when they heard of a crippled boy who lived not far away, and who was said to be very fond of music, they asked him to join them. He was very much surprised when they told him that they wanted him to learn to play his lyre at the same time that they played theirs. and yet not to play the same notes. But presently he learned to do it, striking notes a little lower in the scale than either Agathon or Philo. And when all three made music together, they were sure it was the most beautiful sound they had ever heard. "Let us go and play at the place of the palace," said Philo. "It will do no harm to try." As the next day was a holiday and they had planned nothing else to do, it was agreed. They rose very early in the morning, before any of the crowds of the cities would be on the streets, took their lyres under their arms, and made their way toward the place of the old palace, helping the crippled boy as they walked. When they were near the place, they met a sad-looking man coming away. He, too, was evidently a musician, for he had a lyre under his arm. But he seemed to be a stranger in the city, and the boy stopped to ask him why he was so sad. "I have come a long way," he said, "because I wanted to try the skill of my lyre with the musicians of your city, and see whether I could not prove myself as great a master as the one who made your lost palace. But I have tried, and have done no better than any of the rest." "Do not be sad about it then," said Agathon, "but turn about and try once more with us. For you have a larger lyre with heavy strings, and I have thought if we could add to our three kinds of notes another still farther down the scale, the music would sound more beautiful than ever. Come with us and listen when we play. Then perhaps you will see how to join in and help us." So the stranger turned about and went with the three boys to the place of the palace. Now the boys had supposed that, as it was so early in the morning, they would be the only ones there. But it happened that a great many musicians had felt, like them, that the morning of the holiday would be a very good time to make another trial of their instruments, and had also thought, like them, that by coming early they would not be interrupted by the crowds. So when the three boys and the stranger came to the street and looked into the place of the palace, they found it almost filled with musicians, some carrying lyres like themselves, and some with harps or flutes or other instruments. It was all very quiet, however, since no one cared to try his skill at playing before all the rest, for every musician was jealous of the others. After they had looked about for a few minutes and had seen why it was that so many were there and yet there was no music, Philo said, "Let us begin to play, Agathon. It can do no harm, and perhaps we can really show these musicians how much better music can be made by playing together than by each one playing for himself." "Very well," said Agathon, "let us begin." So they took up their lyres and began to play them together as they had learned to do. And presently the stranger, whom they had brought with them, touched the strings of his lyre very softly to see if he could find deep notes that would sound sweetly with those of the boys. It was not long before he did so, and when he began really to play with them, and the four lyres sounded in concert, it seemed to Agathon that he heard for the first time the music of which he had been dreaming all his life. Now the other musicians who were standing by in silence were listening with the greatest surprise, for they had never heard any music like this in all their lives. After a little time, one and another of them, seeing that it was possible to play at the same time with others, took up his instrument and began to join the tune that the four were playing, for the tune itself was known to all of them, being the chief national song of the kingdom. So there spread from one musician to another the desire to take a part in this strange new music, until hardly any were left who could keep from taking up their instruments and joining in one part or another of what the others were playing. And there went up a great mingled sound that swept over the whole part of the city where they stood and seemed to fill all the air with music. Playing in this way, all the musicians together, it happened at last that, as they grew more and more joyful with the sound, they struck a great chord, so much more beautiful than anything they had ever heard before, and they held it for a long time, not wishing to change the sound for any other, and looking at one another with eyes full of wonder and happiness. And as they did so, there came into the volume of music the sound of great shouting, for men who had gathered in the streets to listen to the players were calling, "Look, look, the palace, the palace!" And when all the people turned their eyes to the great empty space which had lain waste for so long, they saw a wonderful sight. The earth was breaking away, almost as though another earthquake were pushing it, and out of the midst of it were rising great walls of white marble that lifted themselves higher and higher until there stood in the morning sunshine a new palace of as perfect beauty as men had ever dreamed of in the old one. All these years it had waited for that great chord of music to lift it out of the earth, and at last it had come. This, as I've heard the story, is the way in which men learn to make music together, instead of playing and singing each for himself. And this is the way in which the new palace was made for the king, who had been so long without one. But no one quite knew who had done it. So the musicians forgot their jealousies of one another, and all the people rejoiced together. And if there has not been another earthquake, I suppose the new palace must be standing yet. As I read that story, it made me think of some of the things I had learned about music in a wonderful book called What Music Can Do for You by Harriet Seymour, published in 1920. I'll post a link in the podcast notes. Just to give you a taste, let me share some excerpts from that book, starting with a quote from Plato, which opens the book. Musical training is a more potent instrument than any other, because rhythm and harmony find their way into the inward places of the soul on which they mightily fasten. Close quote. If the consciousness of the individual is right and constructive, the world problems must of necessity adjust themselves. By establishing harmony in the individual consciousness, harmony of mass consciousness must follow. The desire for more joy, more love, more health, more happiness is universal and makes us all akin. This life of completeness is not merely a utopian dream. It is a practical result of cooperating with the law, the harmonic law. Chaos in the world is caused by the chaos of separate lives, with their resulting actions and reactions upon other lives, and is directly due to the lack of compliance with the law of nature, that is, the law of harmony, for nature is harmony. Ignorance of nature's law is at the bottom of all misery. If ignorance is the cause, the remedy is education, not the kind we've had in the past, education in externals, but a fundamental understanding of the harmonic principle which governs everything in the universe, the sun and the planets, as well as each individual life. But what has this to do with music? Taught as it has been in the past, as something separate from life, it has very little to do with it. But as a channel through which the law works, it has a great deal to do with it. It is the link by which the individual is made one with the law itself. To know the law and its uses, this is an eternal process. We learn to know the law of music through listening and understanding. Forcing is of no avail. It has to come through naturally, and the function of the teacher is to awaken, not to instruct. You cannot force children to learn anything, but you can so present a thing to them that you will rouse their interest and cause them to undertake the subject of their own free will. At first, they may seem uninterested, but give them a chance to act on their own impulse. Have faith in the child and his unerring feeling for beauty and truth, and this will pass. Many a person's real love for music has been blighted by having first been given the outer form. It is better to not have any lessons than to have mechanical, theoretical lessons. The idea of giving the technical side of anything before having awakened a love and a desire for it seems to defeat the end from the beginning. The great principle is first listening, then thinking, and then action. Did you catch that? There's that pattern for learning I talk about so much. First listen, a heart thing, then thinking, a mind thing, then acting upon it, the creative, useful fruit of the learning. Back to the book. After listening quietly and hearing inwardly, there comes an inner sense of harmony. The chaos of vagrant thoughts is calmed into repose. The mind is stilled to outside influences and becomes a reflector of the inner light, which comes only through stillness. Thoughts become positive. Ideas are born, and one dares to dream of great accomplishments. And through the stillness comes the thought, I can and I will. Those things which seemed beyond reach come quite naturally within the realm of possibility. Faith in our own powers is built up when the chaotic thoughts of the outside world are stilled. Dreams and ideals which have been vague take on definite form, shaping themselves under the influence of that harmony which has been established through listening. The scriptures of all countries lay great stress on stillness, and every great philosopher has given days and nights to silent meditation. What better technique could anyone have than the power to retire to an inner sanctuary, there to obtain the right answer to any problem? Singing and listening has developed this power in many a child, so that they have had the capacity to still their minds and really listen to guidance which has saved their lives and brought them happiness. Imagine, then, a form of general education by which each person became convinced that within himself was the meeting place with God, with harmony and order. During the last few years, all of us have realized that our hectic living is wrong, rushing madly from one thing to another, asking questions and not stopping long enough to hear the answer, dragging our children from one lesson to another, and then surfeiting them with all sorts of artificial amusements. All of this seems like a game invented to prevent anyone from pausing to think. Have we really come to this, that our state of mind is too undesirable to be allowed a moment's chance in which to register? And she wrote this 100 years ago. What would you think of today's world? Music is a language, the greatest of all languages, since it can say that which no words can ever convey. To understand this universal language, to intensify it and so enrich our lives, is the object of music teaching. In the old method, it was necessary for the pupil to depend eternally upon the teacher, so in most cases he grew bored and ceased to play at all. No one can remain really interested in a subject for any length of time unless there is a possibility of getting something to work out alone. Harriet then spends many chapters talking about practical ways children can enter the inner realm of music, things that are absolutely free for you budget-conscious moms, which is most of us. And I will say it again, because so few people will invest in the time to learn to play the piano anymore, since our electronic age does all the playing for us. People can't sell their pianos. They're heavy and hard to move, so they are giving them away. There are millions of unused pianos out there. I see probably one or two free pianos in my Facebook marketplace almost every week. Let people know you're looking for one. Keep your eyes open. A piano is a wonderful instrument to have in the home, especially to teach this law of harmony. Continuing now with the book. A young man, well-educated, ordinarily strong, with devoted friends and plenty of money, became unhappy and discouraged as the result of illness. He decided there was nothing worthwhile in life for him, so concluded to let go and die. The doctor had told him that if he did let go, that unless he put up a fight for life, he would die. As he lay contemplating death, the memory of the second movement of Beethoven's Immortal Fifth floated through his mind. He listened to the concert with joy in his heart, which came from the fact that he could hear and register a tune. He became more and more absorbed in it, imbued with its harmony, and, through it, he was stirred to a desire for life in its fullness, and with a supreme effort put up the fight which brought about his recovery. Music is harmony, harmony is love, and love is God. The Sufi religion of India is based on sound, and their claim is that sound, that is, music, will bring us closer to what is termed God consciousness, or universal love, than any other medium. We want to learn to be in tune with the higher vibrations. She talks about music as being vibrations, because we realize that we shall have more joy, more health, more happiness. To attain this is both possible and practical. If we are, as most of us believe, gods in the making, The process is from lower to higher vibration. Let me put a pause there. She really said, most of us believe we are gods in the making. How many believe that literal divine worth today, even among religious groups? Okay, back to the book. An hour of good music at bedtime will so harmonize the child's consciousness that he will go to sleep happy and serene. These thoughts will do their unfailing work of rebuilding physically, mentally, and spiritually all through the night, and the child will awaken in the morning in the same happy, healthy frame of mind. It is equally important to have music in the morning when consciousness is brought back to the waking state to maintain that harmonious attitude throughout the day. Therefore, it is equal importance to start the day with a song or two. The Hindus have a morning song, a song for noon, an evening song, and a song for midnight. They have songs of praise, songs of love, songs of joy, songs of peace, and many others. To them, the home is a sacred temple, and the parents, the priest and priestess, of the actual presence of God, who is acknowledged and rejoiced in with every homely event of the day. Our education has shown itself such a failure in that it has caused children to be lacking in health, peace of mind, initiative, self-reliance, and a desire to be of service, and needs to be reversed from one of a more or less mechanical process to something vital and real. In America, the average child's repertoire of songs is a shocking thing. It is incredible that, knowing as we do the effect of environment upon children, we allow them to store their minds with the worst imaginable trash. Well, I've gone on long enough for one session together. There's so many gems in this book and her other book, Putting America in Tune, How to Teach Music Appreciation to Children. It's worth taking time to look at those books, and you'll pick up a lot of suggestions for making music more a part of their lives. Let me close with this thought. What if we were as diligent and concerned with teaching our children the language of music as we are in making sure they have mastered their multiplication facts? Harriet Seymour wrote, "It seems extravagant to claim that, if everyone could be shown how to follow a tune and remember it, the world's unrest would be ameliorated. But this would seem to be a fact, nevertheless, because by so doing, each individual would become conscious of the harmony within himself, and would express that harmony to an extent varying according to the degree of its awakening. Would we see that palace suddenly rising?" I have a little melody floating in my mind right now, a melody from the past. "I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony." Bye-bye. See you next time.